This is The Big Web Show, episode number 24. This is a live talk show about the web and the future of web publishing. It's hosted by Jeffrey Zeldman and Dan Benjamin. That's me. And this episode of The Big Web Show is brought to you by Squarespace.com. Squarespace offers users a flexible solution for anyone looking to create a blog, personal portfolio, or any kind of website. No matter what your level of coding experience is, Squarespace will provide the tools you need to create the website you want. They also have an iPhone app that was recently updated with all kinds of great new features, HTML blog editing on the go, push notifications when you get comments, and more. Check them out at squarespace.com and be sure to enter the code 5x5, all spelled out, and you'll get 10% off the lifetime of your order, which is a lot. Jeffrey Zeldman, how are you today?
Hey, Dan. I'm so good.
It's good to good to be back in the console here with you, and we have an amazing guest. Perhaps you could introduce him.
I'm going to. I'm thrilled to. I just want to ask, you were on vacation, correct?
I did. I took a brief vacation. Yes, went to the beach.
And you live by Disneyland, so where does a person who lives by Disneyland? I mean,
yeah, no, that's a fair question. I mean, I live for the record, not Disneyland, Disney World, the one here in the Magic Kingdom in Orlando. People who live here don't often, like, I doubt you go, you know, if you live in Paris, you never go to the Eiffel Tower, I'm told. So that's the same thing with Disney. You're actually forbidden from going to Disney. You drive an hour, you go to the beach, and that's what we did.
Fun.
Yeah.
It was a little man's first time?
His second time going to the beach, but his first time, you know, was a couple of years ago. He was so little, he doesn't have any memory of it, but this time he really got to enjoy it. So
it's cool. Kids love that stuff so much.
Yeah, they do. It's, you know, it's a whole different world when you go and you bring your almost 3-year-old than when you're just there by yourself, or with your spouse. It's, you know, it's great. Relive it again, experience it all again.
Or alone with just a paper bag filled with glue and memories.
Wow.
I don't know. I just...
No, we went. So you afraid. Went there, and that's not a bad thing. But okay. Hey, Todd.
Hey.
How
it's
are
Todd
you?
Domini.
Todd Domini, everybody.
I'm
Todd,
good.
Can I do a little introductory patter about Todd?
Yeah, absolutely.
So for those who don't know or those who need a refresher, Todd's one of my heroes. He's a great web designer, great graphic designer, interface designer. He's one of the first people... I mean, back in like 2000, he was one of the first people to not only totally get on board with CSS and semantic markup, but also with Flash. So he was great at Flash and great at, XHTML, CSS, JavaScript, all that stuff, and seemed very rare in our business to be one of the people who uses the tool that's appropriate to the job he wants to do and doesn't have any religious feelings about any of it, at least. We'll find out if he does, but didn't seem to. And then he became a hero again a few years later, where he was one of the first working stiffs that I know to say, I love my clients and I love working for a company, but I'm going to go out on my own and make a product. And Todd is the CEO and founder of Slideshow Pro, which I think you have like 4,000 employees in 27 countries. Is that right?
No, not quite.
Well, tell us for those who don't know, what is Slideshow Pro? Start there.
Well, Slideshow Pro is a business that I started about 5 years ago now. And to, without getting, too deep into it, I mean, Slideshow Pro is by no means something that I meant to start as a business. It's a full-fledged business now that caters to web designers and to developers and to photographers and creative types who are looking for tools that they can use to publish portfolios, to publish websites, and basically give them the means to publish dynamic photos and videos on their websites.
Upload your photos into a folder, you've got the template, does the rest, sort of does the transitions for you, and there's all kinds of neat little interface widgets that you, Todd Domini, designed, figured out, that just look beautiful. So basically, I won't say any schmo can have a great website, but any great photographer or great painter, illustrator, someone who wants to show, can have a really great dynamic web experience using this product. And is it, do they do it through an app? Is it something they download? How does that part work? It's a web app.
Well, right? I mean, there are kind of two components to it. I mean, Slideshow Pro started with just the Flash Player, which was, you know, in component form and in the form of a plugin for Lightroom as well, so that people could, you know, publish photos and videos and, you know, drop the player in a page and dynamically feed content to it. And then later on down the road, you know, we added in behind that a full-fledged content management system that had the ability to publish content for the player so that, you know, people didn't have to mess around with XML, they didn't have to mess around with Photoshop even. You know, they just uploaded photos to the content management system and hooked up the player to the CMS, and they had a dynamic publishing system that, you know, a client could use. You know, a lot of people who use our products are web designers with clients and people who, you know, they want to maintain their own web presence and they want to swap out photos on their websites and they want to, you know, change content around and that kind of stuff. But a designer doesn't necessarily want to always be on call for that. And right. So they you know, design websites for them and they put, you know, the player on the page, or they put, you know, some other custom creation that they've made using our products, and then hand over the keys to the CMS effectively to their client. So their client can, you know, sign into the CMS with their web browser, they can upload content, they can move it around, they can, you know, change things and not have to bother the designer with any of it.
Right. Yeah, so it's essentially, it's a CMS for visual people or for visual content.
Right, exactly. And I mean, and you can do everything from, you know, just having, you know, just using the player out of the box as is, which a lot of people do, you know, because it has a default style that is, you know, I guess pleasing enough to a lot of people. And then there's like the other end of the spectrum, which are the Flash designers and the developers who, you know, really just go wild with it. And, you know, because the player has over 100 options and features with it. So, you know, people can turn stuff on, they can turn it off, they can move stuff around. And, you know, every month we get these amazing examples from people who are, you know, really hardcore about creating custom experiences online for their clients or even for themselves and just build some amazing stuff.
Who are some of the, like, does the president use it? Do they use it in the Kremlin? Like,
well, for a while there was actually a race between Obama and Hillary and McCain, where all three of them were using it on their websites.
Get out.
Yeah, so that was...
Get out.
So that was a pretty interesting race.
Wow.
And, yeah, that was pretty cool. I think the GOP is actually still using it on their homepage. I'm not sure. Okay. It's not exactly a page I frequent very often.
So you're saying that the Democrats have moved on to HTML5, or what's the story?
Yeah, I think. Well, obviously Hillary's site's gone, so I think I don't know. I haven't been to Obama's site in a while. He's probably changed to something else by now.
People do that, though, right? I mean, they use it, and then when they get comfortable, like the New York Times or somebody like that.
Yeah, because some people turn to the products that we have because they have so many other things they have to do. And, you know, because oftentimes they have a whole other site that they have to build. And the last thing they want to do is sit down and, you know, code some JavaScript or some ActionScript or whatever and, you know, build something on their own when they've got a whole list of other, you know, requests from their client or, you know, what have you. So oftentimes people, you know, will use our products and some, you know, continue to customize them and change them and that kind of stuff. And then some people, you know, build their own complete solutions. And, you know, then the really adventurous people take the Flash player that we have out of the page and they tap into our content management system's API and they build whatever they want based off of the API. So they still have the CMS behind the scene that's publishing content and, you know, managing it and all that kind of stuff. But they build effectively their own front end for it is what they're doing.
So in effect, you replaced client work with this, and this is full time, right?
Right. Yeah,
and
a full time job. Yeah,
and when you And you initially you did everything, right? The development, the design, everything, or did you work with someone right away? How did you do that?
No, I started it all on my own. And, you know, I would love to sit here and say that, you know, that I started Slideshow Pro with the mission of starting a software company and a business, and that, you know, with an organized business plan and all those, you know, nice things that, you know, you hear people, you know, tell you that you should do when you're starting a business. But for me, it was honestly a kind of a fluke because I was already doing a lot of work. I was employed full time. I was working, you know, just crazy hours for Turner Broadcasting here in Atlanta, doing a lot of, design and web development and flash work for them. And Slideshow Pro was something I built for me. It was something that I just identified a need for something like this in my own work with clients that I had and some of the projects I was working on over at Turner. And, you know, back then, you know, this was like 5 or 6 years ago. You know, back then, the idea of being able to dynamically load photos and videos into a specific, you know, spot on a page without having to create multiple HTML pages for each individual image was kind of a new idea at the time. I mean, Flash right. was, you know, Flash had only just started to learn how to parse XML and retrieve images from outside of the Swift. And there weren't all the JavaScript frameworks and stuff that you see now, you know, like the jQuery's and all the like. And so something like that just really didn't exist. And if it did exist, then, you know, the ones I did find weren't built for designers per se. They didn't have a lot of customization options, you know, ways that you could style it and move things around. So, you know, it's one of those stories of, you know, someone couldn't find what they were looking for. And yep. so they sat down and built it themselves is where it all came from.
Now, Todd, exactly. I've got a question for you. How did the whole hosting stuff come into play with this? Because if you go to slideshowpro.com instead of .net, yeah. it says this is for our hosting customers. So can you talk a minute about that and how you decided to go, I mean, into the world of hosting? Was that basically what your customers wanted or something you just thought would be a neat product to offer?
Well, where that came from is that after we developed the content management system, which is Slideshow Pro Director, you know, we developed it with the intent of it being that people would install and use it on their own web servers. And, you know, people can still do that. But we found over time that, you know, some people just had real issues with installing software. You know, not everyone does what we do or the audience of the show probably does. And so it was a real barrier for them. And they really wanted to use the product, but they didn't have the means to put it on their own server. So we would hear from people a lot about that kind of stuff. And so we decided to kind of do something that was similar to, you know, the road that WordPress took. You know, how there's like, you know, WordPress.org and WordPress.com. And it's essentially, you know, when you break it down, it's really the same application both ways. So we followed a similar path and we decided that, you know, we would start deploying Slideshow Pro Director on our own servers and, you know, provide the whole back end, you know, side of it too, so that, you know, stuff could be backed up. It was all hosted in the cloud so that, you know, content couldn't be lost and, you know, single sign up, that kind of stuff, and just make it really easy. So it was something we've been dipping our toes into. I mean, it's not something we promote very heavily right now, but you know, I foresee us doing more in the subscription and hosted space going forward.
And tell me also if you can a little bit about mobile, because a lot of the people in the chat room right now are asking, well, what about HTML5? And right. you've taken that gauntlet up in at least to get into the mobile space. So how has that been affecting what you guys are working on?
Yeah, I mean, it's such a big question, right? I mean, I don't even know. It's hard to know where to start with that, because this has been such a bizarre year, I think, in a lot of ways. The whole Flash question, right? I mean, it just seems like it's been going on all year long. It's been interesting for us as a business because, you know, as I said before, we started as a business with, you know, the core player, with the Slideshow Pro player built in Flash. And we've been, you know, expanding past that, but our core business has always been about that core player that we developed.
Right.
And, you know, that's just how it's always been. We've continued to enhance it and make it better and, you know, do all kinds of cool stuff with it, but it's still Flash at the end of the day. And so, once the whole mobile scene started to take off, the iPhone started coming around and the iPod Touch, and then, shortly thereafter, then the iPad, and then Steve Jobs writes his letter and posts it to the homepage of Apple.com and, all that kind of stuff. And it was just like, one piece, being stacked on top of another. And we always knew, we've known for a long time that we've wanted to do something in the mobile space. And the whole angle of Apple's devices was always kind of an issue. Because we're users too. I have an iPhone and an iPad at home and all that stuff. And so, we're all very aware of it. So we always knew that we needed to do something in that space. But we knew that we would get around to it, once we had some times. We were working on some other stuff. And so we answered the question by, doing something that's kind of unique, I think, in that we developed an HTML5 player. But instead of doing it as a replacement, per se, for the Flash version, because, what is it, like 98% of people now have the Flash Player plugin on the desktop, we decided that we would tackle the problem by making something that was appropriate for mobile, because that was the big piece of weakness in the chain of sorts. And that was what everyone was concerned about. And so we decided that we would tackle the problem by doing something that was specific for the device, for the software and for the hardware, and to make something that felt right for it, something that looked good on it. And so we developed a player that was specifically made for Apple devices and for Android devices, and it feels like a native app on it, because there's very little browser Chrome. It fills the entire viewing area of the device, and you can swipe it, and you can do all kinds of stuff. And so now, the slideshows that are published by Slideshow Pro Director are, we call them, universal, because in that sense, because, people can view them on the desktop, and if you're viewing somebody's webpage using a mobile device, chances are somebody will be able to view all the same content using their iPhone, their iPad, or their Android phone as well.
Did you set out to, in the migration from Flash to HTML5 and CSS3 for mobile devices, did you set out to exactly mimic the beautiful kind, interfaces that you already had established in Flash? Or did you say, we're going to design appropriate, different but also
right.
great? The second?
Right.
Okay, tell me more about that.
Yeah, more the second. We could have taken a very literal approach, right? We could have taken the interface that people are accustomed to, that, is seen by thousands of people, all around the internet, and created a literal interpretation of the Flash interface for the mobile device. And everything about that is, in my opinion, it just doesn't feel right, because the right. buttons and the icons and all of that stuff, it's all very much geared towards the mouse pointer and to the exact yep. kind of pixel point interface of that kind of stuff. So you need an interface that's with buttons that are as fat as your index finger, right? Something that's comfortable and people can use. And so we literally just threw it all out the window and started over, which, for me as a designer and a developer, it was an incredibly exciting thing, because so much of my time has been, kind of improving the core player that we have, and not right. so much developing new UI ideas. And so the ability to just table all of that and say, okay, here's all my content. What is the most appropriate means and what feels right to be browsing this content? Here's all the stuff I have available to me. I have all these images. I have all these videos. I've got these captions. I've got these titles. If I was a photographer and a user, how would I want to navigate this? What would feel right? And just, try to forget about the fact that, I've already developed, already tackled that problem differently with something else. So it was a very liberating experience for me as a designer and a developer, and I think it was a very big moment for us as a company as well.
What gestural resources did you use, if any? Like, did you just play with the device and write down what happened, or did you go to like a published reference? Like Luke W. has published a reference on touch gestures.
You mean how did we like prototype it and use case it and that kind of stuff?
Obviously, if you're designing for gestures, then you know what the gestures are and you're thinking in gestures. So what was the experience of that? Like, was it just you're familiar with your own iPhone, Android Play, and you knew how they worked?
We were trying to build upon the motor knowledge that people would already have when using their device. You know, what would they expect to happen? What would they, you know, like, you know, I have two kids, and one of my daughters, one of my kids is, 4.5 years old now, and she's been using an iPhone and an iPad since it came out. And it's hilarious to watch her with these devices because she expects to swipe everything. And she's always, you know, running her fingers across the screen and trying to move stuff. And she even does it on the desktop, you know.
Yep.
So she's going to be thrilled by Lion, I guess. That was announced yesterday. We were just trying to tap into what people would naturally do if, you know, they were presented with a photo and they say, okay, what do I do now? And they were like, oh, well, I'll probably, you know, swipe it with my thumb and there you go. So we weren't trying to reinvent the wheel, in other words. We were trying to build upon, you know, people's experience.
Right. How do the two experiences compare in your mind? Do you have a preferred way of experiencing your own product? Are you liking mobile more because it's new, or is the mobile still kind of creaky and slow compared to the flash? How does that all work net out for you?
I have to say I love browsing photos on the iPad. I mean, you know, people love to give, you know, people love to deride the iPad, you know, for a lot of different reasons, but there's just something about photography on an iPad. And, you know, I think some people watching this would probably agree with that. You know, I mean, it feels like it's made for it almost. It's a stunning display. And when photos are published at, you know, which our player does, because we have the whole content management system behind it, when they're published for the exact pixel resolution of the device, they're amazing, and it looks like nothing else. And so I very much enjoy browsing photos on the iPad, not just with our player, but with other ones. You know, like the Guardian Eyewitness, I think is what it's called, is a really good photo browsing application that they have out there too.
You say it's sized precisely for the viewport. Does that mean, do you resize the uploaded photos on the fly?
Yeah, because with the content management system, you dump into it all of your original photos as, you know, as high of a resolution as you can push up. And then the content management system stores all of that stuff. And then when the flash player requests content, or the mobile player requests content, or whatever else requests content, it's all of the images that come back are tailor-made for those exact screen dimensions. So when you publish a slideshow from Director, you get images that are formatted for the exact dimensions of the flash player, and that translates all the way down to an iPad, to an iPhone, to an Android device. No matter what the screen resolution is, the images are always formatted for those exact specifications. So no matter, you know, what door you walk through, you get the best quality image.
I thought we were going to a world where pixels didn't matter anymore, but we're not. Right? I mean, wasn't the, you know, higher and higher resolution displays and everything, you know, it just looks good because it looks good. No, there's all secret pixel negotiation in the background, always. I've been talking to a lot of the web type people, right? And it's almost like a step back. They have to recut fonts, kind of almost like, what do you call? Like, what were the little bitmaps again? To really,
right.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I mean, I think downscaling is perfectly fine. I mean, you can take a very large image and you know, force it, you know, down to another, you know, width and height, and it, in most cases, it looks pretty good. Not as good as a new one that's generated at those specific sizes, but you know, any web developer would you know that and have experience with that for sure.
You don't lose quality by resampling just because you're making copies. I mean, I know everyone does this. I know Flickr does this and everything.
Yeah, there's a little bit. I mean, there's still that one generation, right? I mean, there's still a step away from that, which is what everyone else does, right?
Right, and the compression.
Yep. Yep.
Now I want to shift gears for a second, Todd, if you don't mind, because there's a lot of people out there who maybe they became familiar with you the same way that I did, and that is to say, there was a little blog out there called whatdoiknow.org. It's still there.
Right.
Thank you for not just blowing it away, but way back in March of 2008, I think is when you wrote your last post.
Yep.
And
right.
you know, and I like to say this, you did just what the Beatles did, and you said, you know what, we're going to walk away while it's all still really good. And that's what you did. But by then, you had already launched Slideshow Pro. It had already kind of become darn near full-time thing for you. But tell me about that. What was that like to stop blogging? I mean, you had been blogging on a regular basis daily, way that Jeffrey and I and a lot of other people had. But you always had a lot to say. You didn't just blog, I got a haircut today. You had something to say. You wrote articles. You wrote great pieces. You were educational. You shared information. You shared good links. You know, and then all of a sudden you just stopped. Why? Tell me about that. Was that a tough decision?
It was kind of a natural process, I think. I used to spend a lot of time and you know, I'm not being dramatic about that. I mean, I would spend a considerable amount of time writing blog posts and, you know, thinking about what it is that I wanted to say and, you know, how much detail I wanted to go into and, you know, doing research for things and all of that. And it was such a great experience, and I so enjoyed doing it. And I found that at a particular point, I wasn't quite sure what I was contributing to the conversation anymore, if that makes sense. You know, I felt like there were so many blogs and there were so many people leaving comments on websites. And, you know, it's like the thing of going to somebody's website and there are 150 comments on a post and you're so tempted to write something, but who's going to read it? And what impact will it make? And is it really the best use of your time at that particular moment? And when I was writing the blog was, you know, before I had kids and before I became very involved in a lot of business, you know, matters and that kind of stuff.
Right.
And it kind of got pushed, you know, to the side. It wasn't for me having a lack of things that I wanted to say or to vocalize. It was a matter of time and also just not quite sure where my place was in it and what the value of it was anymore. You know, and today I think you can kind of translate over to Flickr. Like I have serious ups and downs. I'm sorry, not Flickr, with Twitter. Like I have serious ups and downs with Twitter. Some days I just absolutely love it, and some days I despise it. You know, and I just shut it off, and I won't look at it for a couple of days because it is kind of like screaming into the void sometimes, or just
yeah,
you know, and it turns into such an obnoxious echo chamber sometimes, And it's tiresome, and it wears you down, and it's a distraction. So, I don't know. Sometimes I feel like I have enough noise in my life sometimes, and I don't necessarily need to contribute anymore or to jump in on it per se. So,
well, and we were talking yesterday when we were doing a little bit of sound check, make sure everything was set up. You mentioned yesterday, and we were discussing in probably more detail than we have time today, how when you started blogging, and for many years following that, you could talk about a variety of topics on your website. You could talk one day about fonts, another about design, another about Flash, another about the industry. And now it seems like you know, there aren't just sites that talk exclusively about fonts and typefaces. There are websites that devote themselves. I think the example we gave is just to pixel anti-aliasing, you know, or just to a specific minuscule aspect of design. And that site will have thousands of readers. So can you have a more general purpose website anymore? Is that part of it? Was that part of it for you?
I don't know if that was so much part of it. I mean, to your point, though, I mean, yeah, I'm not, you know, it's interesting. Like, I look back through my bookmarks, and because I have the same bookmarks, you know, in my history that I had, like, you know, 6 or 7 years ago.
Wow.
And, you know what, and you know, Jeffrey, maybe, you know, or both of you guys, maybe the same with me on this. You know, back in the day, all I used to read was blogs.
Right.
You know, I mean, sometimes I would go to New York Times, or I go to, you know, whatever, some of the big sites. And now I just rarely do. And if I do, it's for additional context that extends something else. What's that?
Is it additional context on a blog tweet?
Yeah.
On a tweet? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Like it's another layer on top of something else that I found through some other means, like, you know, Flickr or Facebook or Twitter or, you know, something like that. There just doesn't seem to be, which I think is somewhat disappointing. I mean, because I really do miss that time period, in a sense. I think there was a lot of really cool creative stuff going on at that time. And so much of what's happening now, so much of it has been homogenized and, you know, down where, you know, everyone's on Twitter, everyone's on Facebook, and there's not a lot of creative, you know, things happening so much in that space anymore.
Well, there are.
It's kind of a blanket statement, I know. I mean, there's lots of stuff going on. But.
There are, and you can do it. Like, I'm trying to have a general website still. But it can feel frustrating, like the traffic has gone away from that. Traffic is not where, you know, that's not where your traffic is. I mean, I have a lot more readers on Twitter than I will have on a blog post.
Right,
you know?
Right.
And I don't even know when something gets retweeted a lot, if most of those people are actually, any of them are reading it, or they're just going, oh, Zeldman said blah, blah, that's funny, and retweeting it. So, I don't know.
And sometimes you can tell how long you've known somebody or how long they've been around by how they contact you. You know, like, I have some people that send me direct emails, and then you have some people that send me, like, you know, DMs through Twitter, or they contact me through Facebook and stuff. You know, like, they send me an email to Facebook, like, I have Facebook open all day. And it's, you know what I mean? Like, it's just such a strange thing.
My, like, really old friends or people that I didn't communicate with through the whole 1995 to 2004, let's call that the, like, underground wild years of the web.
Right.
All of a sudden they're back in my life, but they're mainly through, which is wonderful, but they're mainly through Facebook. That's mainly how those people communicate with me.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And yeah, you're absolutely right. Somebody I've known forever is going to send me an email with an address nobody else knows and blah, blah.
Right.
I've got another question for you, just back to something that's on my mind a lot as I am, you know, doing things here at 5x5, and I think, you know, okay, I have a couple of people who are kind of working part-time-ish for me, and you know, you, one of the things that you did, I remember a while back, right shortly after, now you didn't, the idea and the concept for Slideshow Pro was yours at first, but at some point you brought in somebody to help you out, right? And now you have at least 300 or 400 people all working for you, so that you have a 24-hour day operation or something. How does that work? What's the real picture of your business like?
Well, I mean, to what you're referring to, I mean, back when I started Slideshow Pro, it was, you know, like I said earlier, it was just the player. And one of our, it was just me at the time, one of my customers developed his own, like, light CMS for publishing static content for the player. You know, Slideshow Pro people will recognize his name. He's Brad Daly. And he lived up in Canada, and he developed this, you know, little, you know, PHP MySQL app and sold it for $5 on his website. And said, you know, hey, do you mind if I put this out there? You know, I think some people might, you know, like using it. And And I was like, no, go ahead. And, you know, I was thrilled, you know, to see someone build upon something that I had done. And so we did. And he and I kept in touch, you know, throughout the course of the year. If I was coming out with a new product or rather a new feature or changing something or, you know, something that would affect him, you know, we would talk about it and I would give him advance notice and he would fold that into what he was doing. And it wasn't until probably like maybe a year or a year and a half after that, you know, one day I just kind of, I woke up and I thought, you know, this is kind of silly, you know? I mean, you're over here on this island and you're building this thing and we're communicating and working together and improving these, you know, the stuff in tandem. You know, why don't we just work together on this? You know, why don't we take, you know, the groundwork that you've built and I'll jump in and I'll, you know, work on, you know, the design end of things, you know, the user experience of it and all of that. And we just, you know, collaborate and, you know, get in the same room and knock it out and come out with a product that we could sell through Slideshow Pro. And that's what we did. And that was the birth of Slideshow Pro Director. And that's where that came from. So today, Brad and I are the main people behind Slideshow Pro. We both develop the products. You know, I do the Flash Player. I do the Lightroom stuff. I do a lot of the design work and the Flash work and all that. And Brad does a lot of the back end stuff. He does, you know, the whole application side of it. He handles a lot of the hosting. And beyond that, we have three other guys that, you know, kind of, you know, do, you know, pieces of things, you know, on their own. They provide customer support. They help out with things like documentation on the wiki that we have. And they also help with some of the utilities and some of the other accessory products that we're developing. So, yeah, so we're kind of spread out all over the place.
And are you guys mainly virtual then, or are you all in the same office, or do you meet up? How does that work?
No, we're purely virtual. You know, Brad lives up in Missouri. I'm in Atlanta, and the other guys are in everywhere from Colorado to Alabama to Mexico.
Your phone people aren't in a central place. Are they? Is someone manning the phones 24/7, or are they on schedules? How does that work?
We all keep pretty, you know, regular hours, you know. I mean, even though the time zones are different, we're all, you know, on pretty much at the same time. And we all kind of, you know, work on our own things and we get together when we need to.
What I mean is phone support. How does that work? Do you have like some Google phone number and then and sometimes it goes to Pedro when he's on, and then at another time of day it gets sent over to you? Do the phone calls get routed to the right person?
How does technically
have to work?
We actually don't do anything on the phone. We don't have any published phone numbers. You know, much to the chagrin, I think, of some of our more needy people. But if we offered an 800 number and, you know, went down that road, I would have to have people, you know, sitting on phones all day long. And truth is that, you know, 99% of the questions that we get from people are of a technical nature. And, you know, people have to provide context to what it is that they're asking about. You know, we need to see a page. We need a URL. We need access to something, FTP information, all of that kind of stuff. And you can't really do that over the phone anyway.
It's an email process back and forth over a day or two.
Exactly. Right. Yeah, we use a product called HelpSpot, which I highly recommend, which we love, and just really saved our ass, honestly, when it came to support, because it provided, you know, a browser based email, you know, ticketing system that we could use for you know, shuttling tickets back and forth and handling people's questions. And yeah, I mean, we do it all day, every day. You know, all of us do support. All five of us are in there talking to people every day.
Wow. How do you keep everyone consistent and on track? You know, so that it's the same message.
You mean like talking points kind of stuff?
Yeah. or knowing how much you guys do and don't do, like, we can't help with this, but we can do that.
Yeah, when each of the people who you know handle support with us, when each of them started, I mean, I spoke with every one of them about, you know, kind of ground rules of, you know, things you do, things you don't do, things you promise, things you don't, how far to go with things, you know, because sometimes when people realize that you have technical expertise that goes beyond your own products, they start asking about, oh, well, you know, I have this CSS menu and you know, it doesn't overlay, you know, it's disappearing behind a div, you know, can you help me with that? Kind of, I mean, we get, God, I mean, we just get everything. So, you know, at some point you have to draw the line and say, sorry, you know, we can only focus on the products that we offer.
When I was first promoting web standards back in the 90s, I was that guy. Only I didn't have a business. It wasn't like I was making money, but people would, and a lot of times I didn't know. And then I'd pull someone else in. I'd go, I don't know. Let's ask Steve Champion. Let's ask Dory Smith, Eric Meyer, what, you know.
And well, that was the fun period, right? I mean, that's when everyone was just figuring everything out.
Right.
And, you know, I think I was talking to Dan about this yesterday. You know, so much of what's out there now is there's all these prepackaged solutions for everything, you know. Like you have, you know, the top 10 CSS frameworks and the top 10 JavaScript frameworks and the top 10 CSS menus. And, you know, it's like shopping in a candy aisle. You know, you walk down the aisle and you're like, oh, you know, I'll take a little jQuery. I'll take this CSS menu and I'll throw them all into Dreamweaver and I'll push them up online. And, you know, presto, I've got a, you know, a web app or a website or whatever. And, you know, for better or worse, that's kind of the direction that things have gone in.
You don't think there's... That's true. There's that definition. That direction is definitely happening, and it makes sense. Because not everyone is skilled or has time. A lot of people who have to make websites don't have time to learn all the crap. But don't you also see? I mean, I see doing an event apart and stuff. I see a tremendous interest in craft, and I see people really. There's definitely lots of people. I agree that just want to know. You know, have someone else code it for them and design it for them. But I also see a tremendous number of people who don't want to accept any of those solutions and who are, you know, who work really hard to come up with something that feels unique but is still usable and all that good stuff.
Right. And, you know, I mean, the only thing I can, you know, express about it is that, I mean, at least for me, it was such an exciting tipping point in my own experience and career from when, like the day that I recognized the fact that I had this interface that was between me and what it was that I was trying to accomplish, you know, speaking of something like a WYSIWYG editor, like Dreamweaver or something of the like, you know, the day that you're just like, God, you know, I'm so sick of this app, like, you know, messing with what it is that I'm trying to do. And, you know, this would be so much easier if I just, you know, launched Notepad or something and just, you know, hacked it out myself. And once you take that plunge, you know, it's such an awesome feeling because you don't feel so encumbered by, you know, someone else's vision or someone else's idea of how you should be developing things.
Oh, yeah. I mean, for whatever, maybe there were no products when I started, but I always loved that it was, I mean, for me, what sold me on the web in 1995 was, you know, that you could produce stuff in a text editor.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah,
like,
no kidding.
And in like graphic, what was it called? Graphic before Photoshop even.
Graphic converter.
Graphic converter. Yeah, there was like. Not before Photoshop, but before I could afford Photoshop. Right. Graphic converter. I was able to do like my first websites just using graphic converter.
Whatever happened to animated GIFs too. I mean, not the kind that are little videos, but the kind where people would actually craft them by hand and they would have a purpose on a site. I'm not saying we should bring those things back, Todd, but
like,
you know,
like
that
10K.
Yeah, exactly. That kind of craftsmanship, the idea that somebody would take hours out of their day to move pixels around one at a time. You know, that kind of thing is gone. I mean, I think to the comment you made earlier about, you know, picking the best frameworks, you know, there are certain advantages to that, you know, whether it's a programming framework like Rails or Django, or whether it's a grid layout system, or whether it's something like jQuery. In so many ways, those things save so much time. Yeah. But, you know, do they help or do they hinder the direction?
Or like Slideshow Pro.
Or like Slideshow Pro. I mean, are these things,
exactly,
you know, are these a good direction to go, and why not use them? Or is it inherently, and I was thinking about this after we talked, are they inherently bad, or is it the sort of assembly line results that in some cases are a byproduct of that?
So that everybody will be doing like resolves between, you know, the jQuery link effect or the jQuery photo effect.
Yeah, right, exactly.
I mean, you know, it really depends on the individual, I think, you know, how deep they want to go with this stuff. You know, if you know, some, you know, I think there's some people like, you know, maybe like me and maybe like some other people who view the web as being more than, you know, churning out, you know, website A and website B and that kind of stuff. You know, they want to express themselves in some way, and they want to, you know, tinker with it, and they want to come up with new ideas. And I mean, that's probably a very small sliver of the people who are out there. But they can provide a very, you know, they provide a great introduction, I think, to get people going and to get them excited and to kind of empower them, right? I mean, they make people feel like that they can make amazing things, and they want to, and hopefully they'll want to learn more and they'll want to dig into it and maybe come up with something of their own.
That's probably a good point to end. I hate to do that, but we're kind of out of time. Jeffrey, do you have any closing questions for our guest today?
I'd love to have you on again, because I think there's so much we could talk about.
Much.
But I do think you've articulated a really interesting choice that everyone who's listening and everyone in this business has between, you know, learning how to get your work done faster through tools, and then what do you do with that time? Either handcrafting, and that's what you do, or you use existing tools but use them creatively, and then with the free time that you freed up, make some new product or create some new kind of web content that no one's done before. I mean, right. I think, yeah.
Right. Absolutely. And I think just in general, I think, you know, for better or worse, I think you see that with a lot of the Flash stuff that's out there. You know, people oftentimes like to deride Flash for, you know, having horrible navigations and experiences or whatever else, but it is such a playground in a lot of ways, and it's such a great place for people to experiment with new ideas, and hopefully that won't go away. Yeah. You know, hopefully whatever technology is behind it, you know, hopefully the creativity and the insight is there. So
Todd, if people want to keep track of you, they should go to where should they go today? You do still blog once in a while on the slideshowpro.net blog. You occasionally tweet on Twitter at T Domini, and anywhere else?
I have a kind of a, I don't know if it's really a blog or not, but it's kind of like a whiteboard kind of sketchbook or something, but it's just todddomini.com, and it's where I post things that I find. It sounds kind of corny, but I mean, it's kind of where I try to focus on positive things instead of ranting or, you know, contributing noise to the conversation. It's where I try to, you know, think about and
looks like you got some Halloween pictures of zombies up there right now.
Yeah, that was last weekend.
How did you get Mickey Rourke's? How did you get that candid picture of Mickey Rourke at the top?
Amazing, isn't it? Yeah, I mean, I try to share, you know, things like, you know, visual arts and, you know, music and film and all that kind of stuff. And the occasional photo for myself, too. It's kind of a creative space for me.
Very cool. Well, Todd, thank you so much for being on the show. Jeffrey, thank you always for co-hosting with me. And thanks.
And you, Dan.
Thanks, thank everybody, for tuning in. Have a great
week.
Thank
you, guys.
Bye-bye.
Thanks again to my co-host Jeffrey Zeldman and to our guest Todd Domini of SlideshowPro.net. Thanks also to our sponsor Squarespace for making this show possible. Visit them at squarespace.com and be sure to use the 5x5 coupon code for 10% off the lifetime of your service. And thanks to you for listening. You can hear previous episodes of this show and learn more about all of our other shows at 5x5.tv. And if you enjoyed this episode, please consider rating it in iTunes. It's the best way to help new listeners find out about the show. This is Dan Benjamin for The Big Web Show. We'll see you again next week.